Welcome to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift, sitting in for Jim Meenster today. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. If you'd like to call in, our number is 877-217-5757, or you can email talk@talklouisiana.org. In this segment, we're welcoming State Senator Paige Cortez, who represents District 23 in the Lafayette area. On January 13th, Senator Cortez was elected unanimously by his fellow senators to serve as Senate President. Paige previously served as State Representative for District 43 in Lafayette. A former high school coach and teacher, Paige now works in his wife Angela's family furniture business in Lafayette. Paige, thank you for taking time to be on Talk Louisiana today.
Thank you, Jan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I think this might be your first time, from what I understand, on Talk Louisiana. And I thought it would be nice for the state to get to know more about you as our new state Senate president. So would you start out maybe talking about, you know, your service in our community and what led you into politics?
Sure. Yeah, thank you. It is my first time. And I guess I'll go back to, you know, in the 80s and early 90s, I was, as you mentioned in the preview that or introduction, I was a high school civics and American history teacher, and I coached football, baseball, and track for a number of years. And then as I started having a family in the early 90s, I had an opportunity to get involved in the family home furnishings business. And so I left education after about 6 years. But I didn't leave coaching. I coached, even though my children were small, I coached Little League and mm-hmm. Junior high. And then I started serving on a local commission called the Recreation and Parks Commission. Interestingly enough, Senator Gerald Boudreau, who serves in the Senate with me, was the, and still is, the director of Recreation and Parks for mm-hmm. the Parish of Lafayette. And so I was actually on the commission serving with, you know, that oversees the Recreation and Parks Department. So Gerald and I go back to, we both grew up here in Lafayette. Anyway, so that was sort of my first entry into public service, and that started in the 90s. And served on a number of boards, nonprofits, and got involved that way. But at a certain point in 2007, my children had grown up by then. My son was going to college and playing basketball up at Centenary. And my daughter was a year away from graduation. She was in her senior year. And I thought, you know, I really need to get involved in a bigger way. And had always been enamored with the legislative process, having taught it, but really just watching it. And so I decided to run for state representative in 2007. And as the old saying goes, be careful what you wish for, you know. So here I am 13 years later, having served 4 years in the House and now moving into my ninth year in the Senate. Mm-hmm.
I know that's when I met you, back in 2007. And I remember once you were elected, Paige, I laugh with this, it always warmed my heart. I know you would drive to Baton Rouge with Senator Mike Michaud, and he always mm-hmm. talked about how much you loved the process. You just loved it and would talk about the Constitution and making things better for our state. And you really have enjoyed it.
Well, and I have, and Senator Michaud at the time was my senator. He was the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, and I was fortunate enough to be able to get a seat on House Appropriations. So we were able to talk about the budget and going back and forth, and I really did. I used to bring my Constitution with me, and I'd read through it. Of course, we were at the days, if you remember that time, we were post-Katrina, mm-hmm. and we were in the we had a bunch of surpluses, and so you know, we would go through the constitutional provisions of what the surplus could be used for. And then we went right from that into these deficits because, of course, we immediately phased out part of the Stelly tax, mm-hmm. Which was about a $600 to $700 million a year decrease in personal income tax. And that created some big holes going forward. And so anyway, we were constantly dealing with that stuff. And so I really did enjoy it.
It always seems like a good disaster balances the budget. I hate to say it, but yeah, we did have a lot of surpluses back then. So you served one term as a Lafayette state rep and then ran for the state Senate. So you're now in your third term. You'll be term limited, but you were just elected to serve as Senate president. That must have been something to get a unanimous vote.
Well, it was, there were five people vying for it, and I have to say the perspective, and I know you and I've talked about this, the perspective of the state Senate is very collegial body, 39 members, a very small number group. We all have a real good relationship with each other, even though we may differ on public policy. There's rarely animosity amongst the members. And so the five members who were vying for the Senate president, we were all friends and we were all colleagues, and we happened to all be Republicans, five Republicans. That was a byproduct of the fact that we have 27 of the 39 members are Republican and only 12 are Democrats. So would have been highly unlikely that a Democrat would have been elected the Senate president. So we had conversations throughout, but in the end, I guess we all were going around and asking our colleagues, giving them what we believe to be the vision of the future of the Senate, and I guess I got traction, and all of the other four, at one time or another, came to me and said, "Look, it looks like you're gonna be the Senate president. I'd like to support you." And so that was really humbling that the other four people in the race all came to me and said, mm-hmm. "I'd like to support you." And so, yeah, it was a great day on the 13th, but it was also a very humbling day.
Right. I know from your days as a coach, I've heard you say that you really strive to be a coalition builder. And I know the Senate, if you can talk about that, it's got to be really different first serving in the House with, you know, so many representatives, and then moving over to the Senate, which is just, 39 members, much fewer that represent large districts. It's a totally different tenor, isn't it, getting things done?
Oh, no doubt. Well, first of all, the number of bills that get filed, you have 105 state representatives. So consequently, each one of them ran on a platform and wants to get their platform passed, or at least attempt to get it passed. So the volume of bills in the House are greater than the Senate. And the diversity of bills are much greater. And I don't want to say that the Senate is any better or anything. I mean, certainly it's a bicameral legislature. But the Senate, when you represent, you alluded to this, when you represent 120,000 people, versus the 40 to 45,000 in the House, you can have a volatile issue in one small district, and that representative has to go represent that issue. Mm-hmm. And it may not be a big statewide issue, but in that district, it's extremely important. So it creates for those wide and varied issues. In the Senate, it usually, in general terms, the senators take up more broad issues, mm-hmm. simply because their districts are broader.
Right.
I think it's a byproduct of that.
Right, right. Well, we're going to have a couple of segments with you. I'd like to, we have a couple of minutes, Paige. What are you looking at, since it's a supermajority? I know that there's, 27 Republicans in the Senate. What are going to be some of the big issues? 26?
Well, there's 27 senators, but 26 makes up a supermajority.
Okay.
So we have one more than a supermajority.
Mm-hmm. So it's really going to be, I know that some issues that passed last year in the House didn't make it out of the Senate, but you've got a different body this year. So we're going to talk about some of this in the next segment, but what are some of the issues that you think are going to be big, you know, blockbuster issues this year?
Well, the biggest policy issue, I guess, if you're going to call it that, is going to revolve around legal reform, and some of it will be TARP reform, but there's other legal issues. And so there's this, there's a large number of bills that have been filed relative to that. And I know we can talk more about the individual bills themselves later, but, I did notice on the House side that there was a large number of criminal justice bills filed. So I thought that was interesting, that you generally, if you go to and look at the committees of jurisdiction that these bills have been referred to, you will see what the conversations are going to be around. And I believe the largest number on the House side is in criminal justice, even wow. though civil law, which will handle a lot of the legal stuff and insurance, have a large number of bills as well. But that's probably going to be the biggest issue. There's going to be a number of other issues out there, especially when you get to the budget.
Do you think that they're going to look at dismantling some of the criminal justice reform, or do you think it's just more cleanup of what's been done to release people, you know, that have been in prison maybe that didn't need to be there? Do you think there's a movement one way or the other?
Well, I did see a bill to repeal the death penalty, so I don't know that, you know, that's certainly come up over the years that I've been in there. I don't know if this is I don't recall who the author is. It might be a freshman representative that, you know, feels compelled to bring it. Maybe that was a part of the campaign.
Right.
But I don't think that we're going to go backwards too much. There are some cleanup bills, I suspect, that'll be with regards to justice reinvestment.
Okay. Paige, I'm going to get you to hold on. It's time to take a break. Anyone that would like to call in with any questions, 877-217-5757. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift, sitting in for Jim Engster today. Our number is 877-217-5757 if you'd like to call in. And Paige, we were talking about upcoming bills, and actually we have a couple of callers. If you'd like to take a call first, we have, let's see, John from Lafayette. John, what is your question,
please? That is, with the supermajorities emergent in at least the Senate and probably in the House coming up, is what's the fate of higher education in Louisiana? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, John.
So that's a great question. I would like to talk a little bit about the supermajorities. One of the things that I think is different, you know, in Louisiana versus D.C. is that quite often in D.C., you know, if you're a Republican, you almost are forbidden from voting your own, you know, district. You basically almost have to vote party line. And so when majorities are struck there, it has a lot more importance. I'll give you an example. Some of the Republican districts here in Louisiana are made up, I mean, some of the elected Republican senators, their districts are made up of more Democrats than they are Republicans. So while they may be a Republican, in representing their district back home, they have to realize that they have 55% Democrats and 45% Republicans, but they happen to be elected, which is quite often the reason why Louisiana always, you know, votes Republican in the presidential elections, but we have a Democratic governor. So you can see that that you have these Republican senators. So the first point I wanted to make was that we do have 68 House members. 70 would be a supermajority over there, and 27, which is the supermajority. But just because you have the supermajority doesn't mean you can get that vote of 26 or so on every issue. With regards to the issue of higher education, I think this, you know, higher education right now, the state of higher education is in pretty good shape. I know that there's this there's always a talk about the funding levels, but we have committed quite a bit of money to the TOPS program, which is quite often not counted as money going to higher ed. But remember, these are scholarships that can, all for all practical purposes, can only be used at Louisiana universities. So this is a huge amount of money, some $300 million. It's generally not counted as state funding, but it is in fact state funding. If we pulled it away, the $300 million, and gave it to them in a state general fund, then you wouldn't have the scholarships, but students would have to pay tuitions, but the tuitions would be much lower. So I think it's in good shape.
Right. Thank you, Paige. We also have, can you take another call at this point, Paige? We have Ann on Bluebonnet on the line.
Yes, absolutely.
Ann, thank you for calling.
Yes. My question is, I haven't heard any discussions at all about planning for climate change and global warming. I'm an independent. I'm not a radical or anything, but it troubles me that we're hearing almost zero from Louisiana, and that we have a lot of infrastructure problems. We have a lot of flooding problems, and it doesn't seem like we're getting ready. So could you talk about that? Thank you,
Ann.
Yeah, you know, that really, I guess, if you around the Capitol, that really is more of a federal issue than a state issue. I don't know that we have necessarily discussed much about that. At least in my 13 years, I don't recall much of it. I know we have a bill filed dealing with the Environmental Quality Act, but the flooding. I don't know that we're dealing with the flood issue. I don't know that we're dealing with it in any other way. But anyway, I guess to the point of the question is, has there been much discussion about it? And the answer would be no, there really hasn't.
Paige, I have a question for you on the flooding. And I guess it goes back to the climate change, you know, whether people are 100% in belief of that. Does the legislature deal with any funding to go to the local governments, you know, to help with these flooding issues?
Yes. Well, the state, of course, is the pass-through for a lot of the federal dollars that come down to deal with that. A lot of times they call them community development block grants, CDBGs. But the state did organize a statewide a watershed program, and so there was a lot of money that was spent setting up the engineering contracts. They were awarded, I believe, last year, at the end of last year, or the very beginning of this year, to start modeling these statewide watersheds. So the reason for that, and it's sort of like we've always taken care at the local level of flooding. You know, that's been a parish responsibility. The problem is, as you know, Jan, here in Lafayette Parish, the southern part of Lafayette Parish drains immediately into Vermilion and Iberia Parish.
It's a major problem.
If your problems are downstream, then you have problems upstream. And that's, we're not the only ones that have that. You know, of course, in East Baton Rouge Parish over there, you know, and over into Livingston, they have it similar. So the starting point was, let's figure out what the problems are in these modeling maps, and then we can go back and start applying the funding to the specific projects that will improve the region and not just a parish.
Right.
So that's been what's been happening. There has been some money coming down, by the way. Mm.
We have another caller, if you're open for that. And, Paige, are you able
sure.
to stay on after the 9:30 break? Can you stay on a few more minutes after that?
Sure.
Okay, because I do want to let you talk about tort reform. We have Phil in Jefferson Terrace.
That insurance... Hello?
Phil, welcome to Talk Louisiana.
Yes, ma'am. I understand that the reason our insurance rates are so high is because the insurance company can do that. I mean, they are not regulated. Nobody has really tried to stop them from raising their rates as high as they want to, as far as the market will bear. As far as tort reform, this is bogus, totally bogus. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. So, Paige, any comments?
Well, I don't know, you know, that we used to have the Insurance Rating Commission years ago before I was in the legislature. They got rid of that because they claimed it was too political, and so they put a lot of the power in the hands of the Commissioner of Insurance to some latitude with regards to approving rates. The marketplace in a free enterprise system is businesses are going to come and they're going to try to make a profit. The insurance companies are no exception to that. But what drives their rate increase is going to be argued in the upcoming term is litigation and the amount of payouts that they have to make with regards to these claims. So there's going to be a lot of conversation around the insurance rates, and there's going to be two sides. One side is going to say that they're making too much profits. We need to mandate that they reduce the premium. The other side's going to say, well, you know, if we reduce the number of lawsuits, then they could reduce the premium naturally within the market
right.
because you're going to have other companies that are going to be competing against them.
Paige,
and if they
I
have
heard,
lower rates, you're going to...
Oh, excuse me for interrupting you.
No,
go ahead. So
that's it. It's going to be just sort of... going to happen, excuse me, if you will, by virtue of, supply and demand. You know, if you get more insurance companies coming to the market, know, you can have a greater supply, so you can drive price down.
I heard Commissioner Jim Donilon on Talk Louisiana recently, and he was talking about, you know, we rank second in our rates behind Michigan, and Michigan apparently has passed some reform in their insurance industry. Are you aware of all that, or any specifics on what could be done legislatively?
Well, there's a few things that that they're going to talk about. I'm dealing specifically with car insurance and vehicle insurance, because remember, in the I-10/12 corridor, there's a lot of more vehicles than you can up north, just because there's a larger population. You look at the, you know, two biggest cities in Louisiana, New Orleans, and if you add Jefferson Parish in the North Shore, you have a huge block of population there. And then if you go to the capital region, I call it,
we're going to have to ask you to hold that thought. We're taking a break, and we'll be back. Thank you so much. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift sitting in for Jim Engster today. And we're honored to have State Senator Paige Cortez with us on the line for the next segment. And Paige, I apologize for cutting you off at the end. Would you pick up where you were about the insurance? Paige?
And one of the issues is there's two different things going on. I was suggesting that the large number of population in the, I call it the 10-12 corridor, the issue is really more automobile insurance, although it applies for North Louisiana as well. But in North Louisiana, there's a second thing going on, and that's dealing with the forestry industry and the loggers. Many of the loggers can't get insurance on their trucks because there's only, as I was chairman of Senate Transportation, many bills came in front of us that their complaint was there was only two companies that wrote the insurance, and the insurance is on those particular trucks have just, you know, just multiplied every year over the last few years. Again, that puts the magnifying glass on the lack of competition. And, of course, you know, there are those legal billboards that go after truckers, you know. So there's a burden on the, you know, or at least there's a face of the legal community that's saying, you know, truckers do damage, and we specialize in suing truckers. But on the car insurance, there's a couple of different issues going on. One is deals with the jury trial threshold. That's, you know, Louisiana, it has its jury trial threshold set at $50,000. Now, that means that a plaintiff, if they sue for more than $50,000, then the defendant has a right to go to a jury trial or call for a jury trial. Many other states don't have that that high. I think we're the only one at that height,
right,
as far as the number goes. So there's a movement, and there has been a movement to reduce that. The counter argument is that you won't be able to convene enough juries because we have a hard enough time getting juries right now. I don't know if that's true or not. It calls into question how many suits would be filed that otherwise that are being filed now that wouldn't be filed because many of them, I'm told, are being filed in the $45,000 to $49,000 range. Then the other issue is something called collateral source. You probably hear a lot about this, collateral source. The argument from the insurance companies is that the plaintiffs are asking to recover expenses from medical bills. So let's say a medical bill is $100,000. They want to collect $100,000. They present that, but that's not actually what was paid. You know, after the bill was discounted, they may have paid $40,000, $50,000. So there's some bills out there that are going to say that you know the recoverable expenses can be limited only to the actual payments. So there's going to be a large debate on that. There's some other elements to the whole insurance, what was called the omnibus insurance bill. But those are probably the two biggest, I think, issues that'll come out. There was a prescriptive period that wanted to extend it from 1 year to 2 years, the argument being that if you gave the insurance company and the plaintiff more than just a set amount of time to settle the case, they wouldn't have to go to court.
Right.
So there's a lot of elements that we do things different than other states that'll be debated circling around this we call insurance or tort reform.
You know, it seems like a domino effect. There's got to be that perfect way to handle this. And I know other states are different than us, and we've always had more of this civilian approach, you know, based on our French law, the background of Louisiana. But yet, what a tough nut to crack, huh? Like, where do you begin with all this? You move one thing, and then it causes issues in another realm. So,
and we, as a state, and look, as a public, we always do this. Well, we're not as good as Texas at this, so we're not as good as Alabama at this. So we try to blame ourselves for things we're not as good at. But you know, we're better than them in many other areas. And but it's easy when you're running for public office to blame, you know, to make it everything seem very bad, so that you can be the person with the cape to come in and fix it.
Yeah, but it's hard to fix it.
It is, because it's not, you know, I'll give you an example why. If you just go look at the bills filed in House Ways and Means and Revenue and Fiscal Affairs, that is the two committees that deal with the taxing issues. They don't file bills anymore. They file constitutional amendments. So we have on the one side Senator Sharon Hewitt, who did a whole study for the last 2 or 3 years on dedicated funds and exemptions. We had another one done on exemptions. I think her predecessor, but her colleague from North Shore, Senator Jack Donahue, who just recently turned out. But he did a number of studies on the number of exemptions to try to figure out if these tax exemptions were paying for themselves. So, you know, I say this, I brought a bill 2 or 3 years ago to call for a constitutional convention to rewrite the Constitution. Mm-hmm. There's a history behind this. Huey Long took the 1921 Constitution and filled it up in only 4 years with constitutional amendments that hung on until the 1974 Constitutional Convention, where they were able to pull some things out of there.
Right.
But we proceeded to fill it back up again with all these dedications.
And people are, I guess they're leery about opening up that can of worms, huh? It could be a good thing,
right,
or it could end up worse than what we have now. So it's, it always seems easy to make arguments when you're running for office, but getting in there and working with your colleagues is a totally different thing. And then getting the state, you know, to back what you believe is right. Paige, we have about 5 more minutes, and there's 2 issues I'd like you to touch on. The first is the big tort reform, like the big meaning. What is that and what's going to happen? And then we had if you can get it into with the budget, we had a John DePlanche had emailed in about, you know, why is there so much fighting? Is there going to be another fight over the budget, and what's going on with that? If you can maybe spend these last 5 minutes and fill us in on the big issues.
I'll take the budget first. First of all, there's probably going to be less fighting over the budget than there hasn't been in years past, because we have stabilized the revenue versus expenditure side. The fighting will revolve around one thing. We passed a temporary sales tax when Governor John Bel Edwards got elected 4 years ago. It was a one penny sales tax. 2 or 3 years later, in a special session, we reduced it down to 0.45. So there, at that time, when it was reduced back down to 0.45, there was a there was a sunset provision put on it. So in 2025, it goes away. Now, it brings in about $500 million in revenue. So if you're getting $500 million today, and you know that it's not going to be there, and hopefully sales tax grows because our economy grows, if it goes away in 5 years or 5 years. Now, remember, I'm a turned out senator, so it won't affect me personally because I won't have to deal with it. But I would not be prudent, fiscally prudent, if I didn't prepare the future to say that, look, this may not be there 5 years from now. We talked about the fiscal cliff 4 years ago. Let's not put another group of legislators facing a fiscal cliff. So you have to start dealing with how do you phase that, the use of that money out in your operating budget over the next 4 years. And so there's a lot of people that want to do that. That's number one. So, but again, it's just much easier politically just to spend the money in the operating budget, because the forces that come at you and want that money are often very great. As far as the tort reform, I'll switch over to that. Tort reform, remember, is a legal term, And so attorneys understand it, that the public may not understand it. What the public hears is legal reform. And so legal reform is what I always talk to as a number of silos. There's been bills over the last few years dealing with attorney advertising, lawyer advertising, mm-hmm. on billboards and all of this stuff. So there's going to be a number of bills dealing with just that. Then you have legacy lawsuits in the oil and gas areas. These are suits that are filed by landowners against oil companies that damaged their property going way back. Well, what happens is sometimes these properties get a new operator, you know, and the operator that just walks onto the property, never hadn't done anything to it, gets sued simply for being named as an operator. So they sue this whole lineage that's, you know, that's the legacy of that site. Then you have the coastal lawsuits. And then we've already discussed the whole insurance stuff. So it's got a lot of different silos. I think it's really more legal reform than it is tort reform, but certainly tort is a big part of it.
You know, I graduated from law school. I'm dating myself here in 1983, and lawyers, we couldn't advertise. And things have changed so fast. You know, there was first certain types of advertising, and then it just got to be more and more where there were actors on TV. And it's amazing to me how the cultural shift has affected us so much, you know. Do you and your colleagues ever talk about all that? Like,
oh, absolutely.
You know, the culture is impacting what's happening in our state. I think it's holding us back, you know.
And down in our area, Jan, you and I, down, if you travel Highway 90 south from Lafayette to Houma, the number of legal plaintiff billboards that are along there, and I don't fault the attorneys, and I certainly don't fault the billboard.
No, it's a competitive market.
Companies, you know, they're selling their billboards for advertising purposes. But the problem is, when businesses come down there and they drive down there, if they want to attempt to relocate their business, what do they see? They see nothing but these plaintiff billboards. There, you know, it's an impression, as you said. It's sort of like a culture. So the problem in the legislature is we've given the third branch of government, the judicial branch, that authority, and they, rightly so, the Supreme Court controls, you know, the whole advertising of the legal community, right? Because that's a different branch of government.
Well, I think there's...
So you'll see some...
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I said you'll see some bills basically trying to direct the judiciary, the judicial branch, the
I'm
Supreme
looking
Court.
Forward to that. Paige, we're running out of time. I want to thank you so much for being on our show today. State Senator Paige Cortez, best wishes on a successful session.